LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everybody. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of BulkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina, and this week we welcome our special guest, Ms. Catherine Ironwood of the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers and LuckyMojo.com from Forestville, California, bringing us today's topic, creating fixed and prepared amulets and talismans. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of BulkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Ms. Cap. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host, Reverend Art. Take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome once again, everyone, to your Monday night phenomenon that is Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. And it is Monday. We're on the air. What does that mean? Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychic's Facebook page. If you haven't yet, take a few moments, jump on over to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page, find the Magic Mondays post, and drop a comment on it to win your chance at a free 15-minute reading with the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. A lot of great readers out there waiting to give you those insights and information that's just burning to be known. So don't wait. Mondays post, Hoodoo Psychics Facebook. Be there. All right. So excited for tonight's show. And gonna try not to be as so long-winded this week as I could normally get. I'm going to flip it back over to Reverend James. How you been doing?
I am doing well. Here in the, kitchen, not too far away. steady going, doing the things that I do, working on the websites and for different people and myself and for the association and lots of different things, doing the candle services, all of that's the same. But I have recently started putting together lucky Tibetan bracelets or lucky Chinese bracelets, I might think of them as, but they come from a Tibetan practice of protector strings, a string that's blessed by protectors. So I'm putting some of those together, hopefully going to have those available soon as well. That's what I've been up to lately. Turning it back over to you.
You know, those bracelets are really cool, and it's just, I am not that crafty. And to just watch as Reverend James whips these together, and it's an art form all on its own. So excited to be sharing those with everybody here in the very near future. Some other quick announcements. We are pushing forward with finally figuring out how to do some pre-orders on the Southern Appalachian Lenormand deck that Reverend James has developed. Really excited for that, you know, pushing out our herb packets, our bath salts, bath crystals, wash crystals, what have you. So many new things coming. There's not enough hours in the day, honestly, to really get to all of these things. You know, recently it's been a little bit of little boring on the folk conjure point side, doing a lot of catch up on paperwork and that kind of stuff this past week. But stay tuned. If you're not following us on Facebook or Instagram, now's the time to do it, because you'll be the first to see all of the fun stuff that's coming. And I may have a few surprises to throw out there to everyone. But without further ado, joining us here in the studio tonight, an absolutely outstanding person that I truly feel blessed to have had the opportunity to get to know. And it's been just over about a year since she's joined us last to announce a fantastic book, Swinging Through the Last Time, on astrology for root workers. Just going to say, welcome back, Miss Catherine Ironwood. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing the same as always. I'm a very steady person. Try not to run too fast. Try not to lag behind. Always something new. You know, that's me. I've been doing a lot of work lately, writing web pages. And so that's kind of been kind of my thing for the last year or so. New web page every week. And also, of course, running my shop and new products there, too. You know, we have these new little mini spells. Well, they're not new. We did them a year ago, and they sold really well, and we did them as limited editions. And then we said, well, that was a lot of work, and we won't do that again. But all of a sudden, somebody asked us, hey, well, why not do those again? And it was a customer, and we went, you know, let's do them again. So now this month we have limited edition Pride Month mini spell kits. And you can, there's no web page. You can't get them on the web page. You have to hear my voice tell you about them. So you can call the shop and ask how to get one. They are little mini spell kits with a beautiful rainbow bandana and candle, gemstones, you name it. It's all there. So that's what's new at the shop. And I guess I have nothing else to say other than if you know me, you know me. If you don't, hi.
Well, we'll certainly be getting to know a little bit more about you throughout the course of today. But, you know, for those that are out there and listening and not familiar, which I don't know how that's even possible, but no, every week, you know, as part of the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers tech team, you help to churn out a new website or web page, I should say, to the readersandrootworkers.org website. So much information that's out there on top of your Patreon that I know is just chock full of phenomenal information that, you know, folks, it's a couple bucks a week to take part in this project. So many different websites that you work on and support, and just the amount of information free that you give freely to the spiritual community, it's just it boggles the mind. And I have to thank you on behalf of everyone who has benefited from these things. You know, you're active on the Lucky Mojo forum, forum.luckymojo.com.
Yep.
You know, out there answering people's questions and giving tips and tricks. You know, it just, you don't stop, and we love you for it.
Well, thank you so much. And I do have to say one more thing about Patreon, because people who use the Patreon platform are always out there begging, please be my patron, please be my patron, because it is what supports us. And it's cheap enough. I volunteered to do pages for years, and I would always do one page a week. And then when I started working for AIR and doing one page a week at the AIR tech team, I kind of lagged behind on my own site, but I would still do, you know, some commercial page for the web, you know, sales catalog. Just got to keep that, you know, stuff out there. But I found that Patreon pays me to do a web page a week, which is such a relief. And I can do that right now. What I've been working my way through are blues lyrics and hoodoo. A lot of extra
awesome
pages on hoodoo at for the hoodoo in theory and practice, and pages for Southern Spirits, which are archival pages on the history of hoodoo taken from historical sources. And I guess I've kind of backed myself into a corner now with the Lucky W Amulet Archive, which is a was actually my very first material that I put online in a deliberate, ordered way in Usenet back in the 1990s. And when I was given a web page at the University of North Carolina for, you know, I had to use dial-up modem and all, but they gave me a page, and I had to teach myself HTML to use it. And it was just somebody who was friendly to me, who was in the agriculture department of all things, because I was talking about herbs. And so I started putting up these little posts about Lucky Charms and amulets, which I've collected ever since I was a child. And that was 30 years ago. So it's been a long time since I've worked full-time on Lucky W Amulet Archive. And one of the projects was to do these scans of beautiful old cigarette trading cards about Lucky Charms and amulets. And in those days, you had to put your little trading card onto the, there were no separate scanners, you had to put it onto the scanning bed of your photocopy machine and hope that it would take a little picture and you could upload it. And that picture was about 150 pixels by 100 by 150. Sometimes I could get them up to be 150 by 200 pixels. That was all I could do. And so I started that. But in the years since then, of course, the ability of the web to hold gorgeous pictures has made these old little tiny GIFs look pathetic. So my husband, my wonderful helper husband, partner, Nagashiva, and I are working on finally finishing the project that we started, that I started even before I met him, actually. I started 30 years ago, and that is to get all of those beautiful cigarette cards online with my commentary on each one of these charms. Now, somewhere in the middle of all of this, I met up with Gregory Lee White, Papa G. And Papa G was saying, oh, gee, we should do a book about amulets, charms, and talismans. And so I said to him, we've got to do the Will's trade cards. And he said, well, what are they? And I said, well, here, go buy yourself a set. And he did. And he said, my God, these are so pretty. And I said, yeah, it's really a shame to put them up in black and white, but our books are black and white. So he did a tremendous artistic job of turning these color illos into visually legible black and white illos, and there are 50 of them. But we ended up with another 104 charms and amulets that he scanned or he drew, or we gave him art that we had from our old catalogs. And so the book that came out in 2021 was called How to Use Amulets, Charms, and Talismans in the Hoodoo and Conjure Tradition. And on the front cover, you'll see a few of these amulets in color, and also on the back cover, those are from those Will's trading cards. And what we're talking about here is worldwide traditions of amulets. So this book covers pretty much everything. And the reason it does is because the Will's cards, which were devised by Thomas and Kate Pavitt, covered amulets and charms that were in the British Museum. And at the time, of course, the British had a lot of colonial territories, and they were taking home, you know, little gizmos from everywhere, giant Elgin marbles, little golden frog pendants, you name it, it all ended up in the British Museum. So this is was a sort of a starter on the amulets and talismans. Why they are what they are is because of what was going on in the British colonies at that time. Anyone could start a book on these anytime. You could do the amulets and talismans of any one country. But they had done such a beautiful job. And Thomas Pavitt was a jeweler. He was a Freemason. He was an occultist, a theosophist. He took out ads in different little newspapers saying, you know, that were published for the psychic world, saying that he would make custom amulets for people. And so he was never credited on these Will's cards, nor was Kate, his partner, who probably did the copywriting. And they were anonymous. And finally, after all these years, I finally had to say, look, nobody's ever claimed it. It's obviously his art. These are obviously his designs. Compare it to his advertisements. You'll compare it to his book. It's the same person. So I wanted to give him credit as well. So having given you that background, I'm going to say one more thing about myself, and then we can get into the topic proper. I've collected amulets, Lucky Charms and amulets, since I was... And the Lucky W Amulet Archive is my personal collection plus. There, I have so many things, I probably never scan them all and never put them all on. But there was a time when I was putting on, you know, every few days I was putting them on Usenet or on my little private web pages.
Right.
And my idea behind these amulets and charms was originally to collect only lucky ones. I just like luck. But then I realized that many of them were protective. So I know within a few weeks I started branching into protective ones and ones for healing and so forth. So these are a wide variety of charms. They can be made of anything. They can be made of roots and twigs. They can be made of stones and gems. They can be made of metal. They can be made of mud or clay that's been baked or hardened. They can be made of paper. And so the idea that people carry things on them, well, it's very satisfying to me. And all my life I've carried jewelry or gems or charms of one sort or another. So this is my own personal expression, my own personal interest that has made it out into the world in the Lucky W Amulet Archive.
You know, in discussions with you, some of the chats that we've had and reading this book, it definitely spurred a much deeper appreciation and understanding of amulets and talismans for myself. You know, Reverend James and I, one of our favorite things to do is going around to like antique stores and flea markets. And, you know, we try to be as diverse as we can. You know, anywhere we go, any new towns we visit, we're always looking for, you know, those new haunts to check out. But I find myself always drawn to the littles, you know, the stuff, all mm-hmm. of the little charms, little pendants, little brooches that, on one side may just seem to be, mm-hmm. but so many that you come across that have so many different meanings and much deeper connections. It's an amazing treasure hunt. But
well, this brings me to the first question that I'm always asked. If these were just made for pretty, are they just superstitious charms, or are they really empowered? This question is central to the work that I do. There are people who will say an image of St. Michael on a holy medal is intrinsically protective because St. Michael is intrinsic, and anywhere his image is placed, that would be protective. But there are other people who say, oh, it just came out of a factory, stamp, stamp, stamp. You know what? It has to be something handmade. Maybe it should be a little thread-woven amulet, or it should be something made of clay by an artisan. Then it's intrinsic. They prayed over it when they made it. There are levels of belief around this, and some people say, well, but the guy who's making them out of clay, you want to think he prayed over every one of them, but he's probably watching YouTube on with one eye and stamping out these little clay amulets in a village in India with the other eye. You have no idea. So the first thing that's important is, how do amulets become power objects? How do they become empowered? How are they going to be used? I believe that intrinsic beauty helps. In other words, an ugly, crappily made four-leaf clover charm that doesn't really even look like a four-leaf clover probably isn't going to ever be as empowered as one that was really beautiful and shows a four-leaf clover wound together with a horseshoe and a wishbone and the words good luck. And it's just so much prettier. And somebody, you know, probably did that through lost wax casting with sterling silver, and it's really gorgeous and, you know.
Right.
But you still have to empower it. You still have to do something with it. Now, when I was a child, I thought just wearing them was enough. I was like, oh my God, look at this beautiful charm I'm going to wear. It's going to bring me luck. And many times it did. But sometimes it wouldn't. And I began to talk to people who'd say, well, they don't work for me. And I'd say, well, let me see it. And I'd look at it and I'd say, you know, this one isn't, it doesn't have the oomph. So maybe when I was buying them, because I'm an oomph noticer, I'm a psychic, right? And I'd see a case full of like little silver charms, and I go, that one. Why was I doing that? Because it was already empowered. It was already consecrated. If you want to use a religious term, it was already had mana or energy in it, and I picked that one to take home. But if I was given another one that had no power, what do? Right? So one of the first things I teach people is not how to make an amulet, but how to consecrate one that you bought already that doesn't seem to have juice. So I think of amulets as being sort of batteries. Some of them come fully charged, and some of them, they take a charge off your skin if you wear them, and they will always work. And maybe they have a really big charge because somebody wore them for a long time, and they ended up at, you know, the Whistle Stop Antiques, and you go in the case, you go, oh my God, look at that thing. It's like glowing in the dark with energy, and you buy it for $24, right? And you go, how can it be this beautiful thing? And you look at another one, and maybe almost as pretty, and you go, huh, nothing there. Maybe it was never worn. Maybe it was never worn by someone who trusted, believed, and used in it, or maybe it was found by a metal detector, cleaned it up, and it's just been lying in the ground a long time. So the first thing you need to know is how charged up your amulet is, and then to recognize that you can add a charge to it. So some people say, well, they like to lay an amulet on their altar. Maybe put a, like a little glass custard dish or a little glass bowl over it and keep it underneath. And then set a candle on top of that, light the candle and say their prayers. Focus on the candle, because it's easier to focus on a candle than on the amulet. And just let that kind of build up inside that little glass bowl. And I'm talking about a very small, like a little, you know, little bowl that you might melt butter in or break an egg into. That bowl will fill up with your thoughts. Now, some people don't do that. They just lay it straight on the altar. Some of them will surround it by other amulets that have power or by pictures of gods or goddesses, and they will pray, you know, goddess so-and-so, goddess so-and-so, come into this charm that depicts you. They have a religion that allows images of their deities. Or they might say, I'm going to put this out under the moon for one whole moon cycle, or I'm going to put it out under the sun and under the moon, or I'm going to put it in water under the sun and in water under the moon. Why do people do that? Because the water, again, you have it in a bowl and it's like reflecting and picking up energy. Some people put their hand over the water and pray onto it. Now, amulet be mine. Some people just pick it up right out of the Woolworth's basement jewelry cabinet and say, I'm going to wear it. I'm going to wear it home. And the minute it touches them, it begins to pick up energy from them. So if it's an amulet that you can wear on your skin for a few days, at least 7 days is sort of recommended, 3 minimum, but 7 is usually recommended. And some will say 9, and some will say a full month. And there's numbers, you know, that people can use. It picks up warmth from you, and it begins to have your desires and wishes. Touch it frequently. If it's a ring, you know, spin it on your finger. Take a look at it. If it's a pendant, you know, put your hand over it and feel it against your top of your rib cage or your collarbone, wherever the pendant falls, you know, and hold it against you and pray with it. Or if you like to work remotely, put it on a table and you light a candle around it. Some people, a very old way of working would be put 3 candles out in a triangle and put the amulet that they're going to empower in the center. And they will pray then for the 3 candles, which might have different meanings or might all be the same. In other words, some people would say Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Some people would say, you know, body, mind, and spirit. Some would say, you know, health, wealth, and happiness. But those 3 candles then focus their energy into the amulet. So that's how I start, okay?
You know, and this is a fantastic intro. We're pretty much already off and running, but let's take a brief moment, and we're going to get a few announcements from our very own Reverend James, and then we'll be back and we'll dive in full on into amulets and talismans.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Now for some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Tuesday, June 18th on the Crystal Silencing and Syndication with John St. Germain will be The Spiritual Church, Leafy Anderson, and Black Hawk Part 2. And Tuesday, June 18th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in Syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of Ask a Witch Number 5. And Wednesday, June 19th on The Now You Know Show in Syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of Scriptural Sleep and Pyrite. And Thursday, June 20th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deb Boyce will be a seasonal rebroadcast for Litha. And next Sunday, June 23rd at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman will be Miss Elvira on the topic of working with land spirits. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors, and back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And, you know, like I said right before the break, we're just getting started and already have been providing some fantastic information. Because, you know, that is one thing that really does come to mind is how do I energize, activate, kickstart, whatever adjective, word you'd like to throw in there, this talisman that, you know, it might not be new, but it's new to me. Absolutely love that. And yeah, we've already got some fantastic questions building in the chat. So let's turn it back over to you, Miss Kat. After charging and, you know, we're off and running with our amulets and talismans, what comes next?
Well, the next thing is the proper way to wear them and store them. So to wear an amulet or talisman, you can wear it in public or you can hide it. And there's reasons for both. And there are... this relates to the first question that I saw. Wickway is up, said, I need a charm amulet or talisman for my dog, please. The dog can't hide it, unless you consider its microchip to be a talisman, which it might be. But the dog can't hide it. So now the dog needs some way to show it, just like a person wearing a necklace. The dog is going to have that amulet or talisman on their collar. It could be laced into the collar. It could be sewn onto a leather collar. Craftsmanship is what it is. It could hang as a pendant from the collar. The exact same thing happens with people. You can wear it as a necklace, a ring, a bracelet. But you also can have amulets or talismans that are stationary. For instance, those kind of little things that hang in the window and are sparkly. That could be a charged amulet. And anyone who comes into the house will go, oh, pretty, and that's all they think, but it's actually bringing peace to the home or whatever it may be. But generally speaking, we think of amulets and talismans as something worn on the body or sewed into the clothing. In Mongolia, it's very common to sew little protection packets with Buddhist little woodblock stamping on them for protection. They're put into a little brocade packet. And then that is sewn into the seams of the quilted jackets that the children wear at the shoulders. So there's one on each shoulder, or at least one on one shoulder. And that is also used protection, like think of an angel on your shoulder. Right? So you can adapt that right to your way of working, too. You can sew them into the lining of clothes. You can sew them into the lining of the backpack your child carries to school. So not all amulets or talismans need to be seen, but many of them are. They can be used as crib toys. They can be hung over a baby's crib. In fact, the fascinum used to be used that way in Rome. It was a little winged penis amulet, and it was used as a crib toy over a baby boy's crib with a little winged penis telling them they're going to grow up to be a man.
Wow, that's phenomenal. I think back a little bit about, you know, and this kind of leads to one of the questions that we do have in the chat about, you know, how to use talismans. Balkan Diviner asks, how can you use talismans and sneaky tricks in the most creative way possible? Is not everyone is comfortable with this. But, you know, that the sewing into the clothing you wear, it really strikes me as, I mean, it's not so much a sneaky trick as in, you know, you're working it on someone else. But, you know, to be able to know that it's fully there and not, you know, be broadcasting that, you know, that to me is one of the ways that a lot of people kind of feel most comfortable in wearing things. Cause you know, in this day and age, you never know quite what's going to trigger somebody when they see it.
Well, there's another thing here too. And I was going to say this day and age isn't, and triggering people is far from the cultural heritage we have, in my opinion. If you wore something of value and it was shown, a cut purse or a highway robber might take it off of you. If you wore it in your pocket, nobody would know. So there's also the question of many amulets and talismans are made of something valuable. They might be made of a gold or silver or a gemstone. You don't want to be necessarily wearing that out. You might not feel safe wearing it out simply for the possibility of robbery. And what Balkan Diviner asked is, how do we sneak them? Well, the cultural ways, they're called pocket pieces. You carry them in your pocket. Everybody, men, when I was young, every man had pocket pieces, lucky pocket pieces. It might be a foreign coin they'd picked up when they were fighting in World War II, and they'd gotten this coin from the Philippines, and they'd gotten into a battle, and they got out safely. Damn, that thing was lucky, and they carried it with them for the rest of their lives. So there are many kinds of very, what we might call, not made as amulets, but they become lucky pocket pieces. And there are people who carry many pocket pieces. We have those photos of President Obama with his whole, somebody asked him, what do you got in your pocket? He just pulled out this whole handful of them. And then a lot of people laughed and said, oh my God, he's so superstitious. And then John McCain, who was a Republican and really on the other side of the fence from Obama politically, said, what are you talking about? I got them in my pocket, and he pulled open his pocket, and he had a whole handful of pocket pieces, too. So it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, you can have pocket pieces. Women are more likely to put them in their purses, and they will often put them in the zipper pouch. There's a little zipper part of your purse. Almost every purse has them. I guess it's for change or something, and they just put them in the zipper part. I've also used some of the more sturdy amulets, nothing delicate, nothing very valuable, that every purse, unless it has a fold over and a snap, it will have a zipper. And the zipper will have a little hole at the end of the zipper. Have you ever wondered why that zipper has a hole on it? Those zippers were not invented back in prehistoric times. Those zippers are recent. The reason the zippers have holes is that you could put a charm on them. That's what the hole is there for. It literally is a hole to put your charm on. So anything with a zipper, you could put a little bead on it, you could put a little bauble, you could put a little amulet. And if you have a leather purse that folds over and snaps, often those are made with big rings or brass rings to put the, I'm talking sort of a Western style purse, you know,
right.
Like a saddleback type purse. And they will have brass rings, and then the strap will be leather and will go through those brass rings and be riveted, hang the charm from the ring, from the brass ring, if it doesn't have a zipper. It's very easy to put simple little amulets that way. I use layers of amulets. I have my cheap ones, I have my common ones, and then I have my very valuable ones, which I wear as jewelry. And that brings me to Balkan Diviner's really quick question. He says, I know Miss Kat is retired from spell working, but is she still doing jewelry, gems, or charms for clients? And the answer is yes, yes, and yes. And if you want me to do a ceremony of empowerment over your amuletic jewelry, I will be very glad to do so. If it's hollow, like a locket, I can make a protection packet out of it, or any other kind of thing you would like it to be. If it's not hollow, I'll just do the altar work over it, and I'll send it back to you with a little dram vial of oil that you can anoint it with on a regular basis. So there you go. I do that. $100 service for each one I make or consecrate.
That's phenomenal. You know, while we're on the topic of wearing and storing amulets, is there a wrong way to wear or store your amulets or talismans?
Well, throwing them in the garbage is a bad idea. Putting them down the dish drain when you have one of those garbage shredding machines, that's not good. I've seen people do these. Wearing one that's too loose for your finger while you're weeding spinach is guaranteed no-no. I lost the most beautiful lost wax cast sterling silver ring I had custom made by a friend of mine who was a jeweler that was the absolute perfect me ring, and it came off while I was weeding spinach. I went back I just went back over and over. Oh my God, did I lose it in the carrots? Did I lose it in the spinach? Will it come up? I had this vision that like a spinach would come up and it would be there around it. No, never saw it again. You know, that's a wrong way to wear it. Don't wear anything that's loose. Now, there are some amulets, though, that you do wear in a what I would call fragile position. And those are the evil eye amulets. Those you want to wear on a thin chain or string, because when they take a hit, you want that string to break. You want to know they took a hit. You can lose the string or the chain, throw it in a crossroads, but you want to take that amulet back. If it didn't break, if it fell on the ground, it did not break, you're going to take it back and recharge it up and thank it, of course, and recharge it up and use it again. So people have a tendency, they buy an evil eye charm. It's on a thin, fine little silver chain, and a chain breaks, and they go, dang, my chain was too thin. I got to go buy a heavier chain. They don't realize that it took the hit, they should thank it, they should recharge it, and they should put it back on a thin chain again.
You know, that's a tip in and of itself. I've actually seen individuals do that, or, you know, like Reverend James and I, we have them hanging in windows, we have them hanging on the outside of the house, and we had one literally, it fell. I mean, this is a fairly sizable, it's about a 6-inch glass disc. It fell off the door and made such a crash. You know, there was no way we were going to miss this. But, you know, did exactly that. You know, it was replaced in a way to, you know, we cleansed it, thanked it, and it's back out and patrolling as we speak. But, you know, making sure that these amulets and talismans are, you know, being utilized in the way that they're intended, that's huge.
And think about all those glass ones from Turkey. If they fall and break, you can't put them back together again. They're broken. So they were made to take a hit. And you have to respect that tradition. Those little hamsa hands, all made of glass with all those little fingers, and they fall. They're often tied just with a little blue ribbon. And the whole thing's going to come apart, but it won't come apart till it's time, and it will work for you there. Can I answer a question from Dr. Sweets?
Oh, yeah. I was actually, Dr. Sweets had asked about the Asian amulets, and I thought this might be interesting.
Go ahead,
for Reverend James
read that
as well.
Question. Yeah. Go ahead and read.
Dr. Sweets asks, do Asian amulets have to be prepared by monks and have human fluids, i.e. liquefied fats, added to make them work? Someone told him that the Lucky Mojo Curio Company had these square case Asian amulets for sale some time before, and Dr. Sweets wondered who made them.
Ah, very good question. Those were made by monks, they are... Also, there's a little kind that are made of clay from different temple sites that are pressed into a little mold. Those are made by monks. The Thai penis amulets that we sell are made by monks, especially the ones that are carved of wood or coral are made by what are called forest monks. And that is tradition in Asia, in Southeast Asia. Many monks live only on the money they make from donations, these amulets. Then people come along, usually what I call hippie traders. These are people who, you know, have traveled through the world and buy things and sell them. So where did ours come from? They came from a very trusted hippie trader who bought them from forest monks. Now, you have to ask, well, where do they get those plastic cases? Time marches on. You know, now it's not going to be a little glass case, or it's not going to be just loose. The styles of these and the way they are made changes, and they become more and more urbanified, but that's just culture for you. You know, plastic is part of our life now. So the very first time I saw one of these little beautiful little gold-plated brass Buddhas in a plastic case, I was horrified. I wanted to break it out of the case. I'm like, what the heck? But I understood that the case was now part of it. They wanted to keep it pristine in the case. It's like slabbing your comics or slabbing your collectible coins. Some people hate it and some people love it. Well, it depends on how you feel about it. But yeah, those come from forest monks, and they are presumed to be ready to use as they come. I mean, that's how they're made. Now, we have the whole other issue. what about guys in Chinese factories making things that look like genuine South Asian talismans? Yeah, that exists too. So just ask anybody where they got them from, and we'll tell you.
That was one thing that Reverend James and I, during the pandemic, we were taking part in these virtual tours around the world and had the opportunity to virtually tour several Buddhist temples and such in Japan and Taiwan, and the gift shops there. We had the ability to purchase things from the gift shops, and they, you know, to support the temples, they would sell the amulets made by the monks and such that lived at the temple. So we've definitely got ourselves a little collection of those ourselves. But that's fascinating. Dr. Sleaze actually had a second question, and I've not heard this myself. And as I've come to know you to be a wealth of knowledge on bat amulets, an amulet shaped mm-hmm. like a bat that protects the wearer against hexes, enemies, and all forms of black magic when worn for 1 month and then thrown into a dark body of water such as a lake or an ocean. Can we testify to the effectiveness of this or the history of this?
Well, now here you go. You picked the one animal amulet that I use in my teaching as an example. This, more than any other, is the one that shows that cultures deviated from one another, people dispersed around the globe, and they found different animals wherever they went, and they treated them differently. So what is being described here is what I would call reverse bad luck with a black bat. Now, first of all, I got to explain what reverse bad luck is. So in Europe, bats are considered to be demonic creatures. They live in caves. Caves connect to hell, which is perceived as an underworld ruled over by a devil, who's not quite the same as the Jewish Satan, but, you know, people got confused a long time ago. But the devil lives in hell, and he has his imps who surround him, and he has bats that come flying out. And so bats are associated with Halloween. There are superstitions that bats are unlucky because they'll snatch your hair. Now, that's sort of an odd one. Why would bats want to snatch your hair? Oh, well. So, and this goes along, this also extends to a few other animals that are night-dwelling animals, fear of darkness, fear of night. Excuse me. So reverse bad luck is where you take an image that is bad and you make it protective or good. So we have these nuts that are actually Asian nuts called bat nuts. And
yes.
Here we have an interesting thing. The Europeans call them devil pods because they also look like they have a sort of a devilish face on them. And they say, oh, well, these are used for protection if you nail them up over your door. But these nuts actually come from Asia, where they are eaten, I think it's at the Moon Festival, and they are they taste like water chestnuts, related to water chestnuts, and they're ripe at that time, so it's a little ceremonial nature food. Why? Because in Asia, bats are good luck. And why are bats good luck? In China, people love to have words that sound alike. That's a homonym, it's called. And homonyms are words that sound alike but maybe said differently tonally. Chinese is a tonal language. And so the word for bat, and I will not do it justice, I'm not even going to try, it's spelled F-U. Now, I was taught to pronounce that foo. But I had a Chinese lady come into my shop, and I showed her my beautiful teapot with the five bats of happiness on it. And I said, look, I wanted her to read on it. It had some Chinese writing, and I knew she could read Chinese. I said, what is this? And she said, oh, it says happiness. And I said, is that because of the bats? And she kind of looked at me, and because she didn't know the word bat. And I said, bat, foo. She looked at me, and she said, foo, foo. And she goes, oh, fuh. I went, oh, no, I've been pronouncing it wrong all the time. So I thought, now I've learned it's fuh, all right? So I then talked to some woman who was Cantonese Chinese. I said, so, you know, the bat, fuh. And she looks at me, she goes, fuh? She goes, no, that's foo. So all I can say is the word for happiness and the word for bat is the same in Chinese, but pronounced however you want to pronounce it. It's close enough that people have made this bat lucky. So therefore, if you were, and they like five of them, the five bats of happiness, and if you'll see them on everything, especially anything made of bronze or iron. They love to put them in cast in metal. And it's just great, you know, the five bats of happiness. You'll find locks for doors that are made with bat in the form of bats. So there'll be one big bat that's the actual lock, and then four more little bats, like getting smaller as part of the bar that makes the lock bar. These are really old pieces of iron. So the answer to the question is, that idea is European. It's not Asian. How old is it? I don't know. You know, the idea that bats are used in magic actually predates bat charms. They actually use real dried, dehydrated bats. So if you go back to Europe, you'll find, like in books like Powwow, you take a dead bat and you tie it onto your arm with a red ribbon and you can go gambling and win. Well, okay, but that's an actual bat. Some people would then say, well, just use the heart of the, you don't want a whole bat on your arm. Just put the heart, dried heart of the bat on your arm. So now we're talking about a curio as opposed to an amulet per se, but it is an amulet,
right.
but it won't last forever. I mean, it's protonaceous and will decay eventually. So the answer to the question is, find out where you heard about it. This one has the ring of, you know, manufactured ideas, but what do I know? Maybe it's Swedish. Never heard of it before. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist somewhere, but you can tell that it exists in Europe and or if in America from European ancestors. It is not Asian. So long answer to a short question.
But a very intriguing history on the five lucky bats, five happy bats.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, that is something I, you know, just in, you know, Reverend James and I both have a very, you know, large affinity for Asian culture and such. And I can attest to seeing the five bats in just about everywhere you look, really. I mean, that's just outstanding. And while we're still kind of in the wearing and storing phase, Dr. Sweets did have one other quick question here about golden topaz set in gold as an amulet, testifying about the potential effectiveness of topaz being one of the gemstones used for protective purposes. It is considered as specific against envy and intrigue, disease, injury, sudden death, sorcery, and negative magic and lunacy. Stone was thought to be especially effective when set in gold and bound to the left arm.
Okay, so we have a couple of things going on here. Bound to the left arm. Now, remember I mentioned the bat heart bound to the left arm with a red ribbon. The left arm is important. Why do we wear our wedding rings on the left arm? Because the left arm is believed to have a vein that leads directly to the heart. Therefore, it is, and for most people, it's the non-dominant hand. So if you are... You don't want to put something to cramp your style on your dominant hand. You know, you're using that axe or whatever, and this thing is jangling around on your wrist. You don't want that. So you tend to wear protective jewelry on your non-dominant hand and also lucky jewelry on your non-dominant hand. Now, the next we have the word topaz. And again, this is one of those things. You got to dig deep. Do they mean, and I'm not asking Dr. Sweets, because he doesn't know and I don't know, topaz is two different stones, and one is actually topaz, and it comes in golden topaz, and there's also a blue topaz. There's a few other colors of topaz. There's also a form of topaz quartz, which is called citrine topaz or topaz citrine, and it's related to amethyst. And in fact, you can find crystals that are brown at one end, white in the middle, and purple at the other end, and that is amethystine topaz crystal quartz or whatever. It depends on how much heat they underwent, and you can make them artificially if you want to by baking them. Some people call it toasted quartz to make citrine quartz, but it's made naturally in the earth as well, of course. So citrine quartz topaz is used for money getting, and especially when set with gold or gilded materials. Topaz, the other topaz, the one that comes in blue and gold, which is a entirely different stone, is more protective. And it is, the blue, of course, would be against the evil eye. But it also is used for wealth because in the days of old, wealth was gold or silver coinage. And so to take a topaz and set it in gold was to say wealth upon wealth. And it was related to the sun. Now, is it protective against envy? Probably. Is it protective against disease? That could be citrine topaz because it's related to amethyst, which is definitely protective against disease. In other words, when we talk about these things, unless we're talking about an image amulet, like a picture of a frog, it's a frog made out of jade. It's a frog, right? But when we talk about that, right, then we have to ask, what is a frog? Is it a childbirth frog of the ancient Cretans? Is it a lucky three-legged frog of the Chinese? Every culture has their own sense to them. So what I'm going to tell you, Dr. Sweets, is don't get hung up on the specifics unless you particularly want to buy into it. But don't try to judge or evaluate, is this worth it or that worth it? You have to commit. I'm going to be using Taoist amulets, or I'm going to be using only roots, or I'm going to be using only coin amulets, whatever it's going to be, or maybe not only this and this. I'm going to be using jade amulets and gold amulets, and I love those silver amulets. And you end up like me with a frickin' cupboard full of amulets, right? So there's no one way, because humans are varied in their cultures.
Outstanding. Yeah, Reverend James and I, we have these little treasure chest kind of curio cabinet things that house a vast majority of the amulets and talismans that we have. They're hanging all over the bedroom. They're hanging all over the house. They're just everywhere. It becomes a lifestyle test to that.
Yeah, and there's something else here. Maganda said watch fobs. My grandfather had one. That is another way to wear them, and I didn't mention them, I don't think. And Maganda also said, I heard Obama would give them away. And that is true, too. Giving away lucky coins, lucky pennies, lucky charms, holy medals is a very traditional thing to do, particularly toward the young or those who are appealing for help. And many of those forest monks in Asia only accept donations. They're not selling those, carved black coral penis amulets in the marketplace. They're just sitting there making them, and people come and give them money for them or just accept them as a gift. So, yeah, giving away talismans is very traditional.
Very true. You know, so many fantastic questions in the chat. Moving along, Balkan Diviner asks, is amulet talisman working as prevalent in conjure? It's his impression that nowadays people focus intensively on bathing, candle magic, mojo bags, but we rarely hear as much about talismans. And, I can honestly say this is true. Very few of the clients that I talk to really grasp the strength, the vitality of the amulet and the talisman. And even in doing root work consultations on like hoodoo psychics and such, I've discussed crafting an amulet or a talisman or utilizing something of that nature. And they're like, isn't there a bath I can do?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that part of this arises from a misunderstanding of what a mojo is. Mojo is a charm bag, and many people think, oh, mojo should just have herbs and a petition paper in it. Nope, not so. Mojos have all kinds of amulets and talismans in them, especially patient sacks. They have coins. The very first mojo I ever bought had a silver dime and a $2 bill and a very small John the Conqueror root. And the dime and the John the Conqueror root, sat on top of the dime, and then it was all wrapped up in this $2 bill, and it was put into a red cloth. That was it. So amulet, talisman, yes, it is. And it is also a mojo. So a mojo can be a way to carry your charms and you know, if you look at like Native American medicine bags and things like that, yep. they usually have an amulet inside of them. So no, I don't think that amulets and talismans have gone away, but I do think that people have sort of started to think of mojos as this big packet full of herbs, and that's not necessarily so. It might have a few grains of paradise, it might have some herbs in it, but it might have a rabbit foot curio in it, and that would be an amulet or a talisman. So again, there's so many ways to think of this. As far as people wanting to do baths or candles instead of carrying amulets or talismans, one way to propose it to people is to talk to them about consecrated jewelry. That will get them, they'll snap out of whatever, because they'll say, oh, charms, aren't those superstitious? Well, they're willing to burn a candle, but they go, oh, charms, you know, it doesn't work, it's superstition. But if you say to them, consecrated jewelry, they go, oh, where can I get some?
Right. That's very
Balkan
true.
Balkan Diviner also asked, I am curious on, can talismans and amulets be used in crossing? We often find them associated with luck, fortune, protection, and love, but is there a way to integrate them into crossing, damnation, and so forward? Yes, and that would be what's called double cross material. This is where you give somebody, and I've actually made them for clients who wanted to give, they had a band, a rock band, and they had six members or five members, I think it was six, and there was one person they wanted out. So I had to make a whole bunch of identical mojos, but one of them was different. And the one that was different was a cursing and crossing and banishing mojo. And honestly, the guy just, you know, they were blues band in England, right? What do they know about mojos, right? And so I went along with it. I made it. And he handed everyone their mojo. And I had marked one special so only he could see the mark on it. And they all got their mojo. Wow, I got my mojo. I'm going to put it in my guitar case. I'm going to put it in my drum kit, blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, the guy quit. It was like, that was it. So, yeah, but you wouldn't usually, like, here, I'm damning you. Take this necklace with this hanged man on it. You know, that was not so normal. But you can curse a talisman. And, for instance, we have lots of tales like the cursed Hope Diamond and other things like that. There is cursed jewelry, and particularly the idea of cursed amuletic jewelry that came out of India and Asia when the British were looting temples and stealing these beautiful gemstones that had been mined and put into the statuary, and then they were melting the statuary down too. And people said, and they were taking about, here, you know, royalty, here, have these beautiful gems. They were cursed, and they are cursed, and they remain cursed.
And there you have it. It's fascinating, and you really don't think about it, you know, from the side of, you know, cursing, crossing, because you do, generally you think of the protectionary talismans, the love, and so on and so forth. Excellent question. And Balkan Diviner has another fantastic question that I know is going to be near and dear to your heart. What tarot card during a consultation will intuitively make you think this client needs a talisman for this case?
Anything in the Pentacle suit that's not a bad card. In other words, not the Four of Pentacles or something like that. Queen of Pentacles, very much so. Not the two either, not the Two of Pentacles. Queen of Pentacles is straight up like get your talisman. Ace of Pentacles, my God. Here, have your frickin' talisman. God just is saying, here's your talisman. I tend to break up the suits of the tarot. Don't want to go too far off topic here. According to the classical four-element system, which is earth, air, fire, and water, and earth is the coins, which would be diamonds in a playing card deck, and diamonds and gold, which are the coins, or something called coins, they come out of the earth. And so that would recommend talismanic magic, coin magic, gemstone magic, and even root magic would and herb magic would come out of the pentacle suit.
You know, I know for myself, in instances reading cards and such, depending on the deck, you know, some decks are a lot more, I mean, everybody has an image of the, like the Rider Waite in their head. And definitely, I was wondering if you were going to call it the Pentacles. You know, that hits it right in the, you know, dead center of the target. But, you know, some decks that I have, they are very ornate. And, you know, if you're using a deck like that, for me, if the jewelry or something is very prominently being displayed, like, you know, a scepter that's being kind of like thrust into the forefront, things like that are also things to watch out for, in my estimation.
And, oh, sure. Like, in, even in the Rider-Waite, the Emperor is holding an Ankh, which is an amulet.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they would also, but for me, I would specifically recommend an Ankh amulet if I were, you know, as opposed
right.
to get a talisman, you know.
You know, and, you know, still under the wearing and storing, Hemaganda has a great question. Do we know how the fashion for charm bracelets came into vogue? As I think about these,
yes.
and a lot of people look at them, you know, oh, this is so cute. But
mm-hmm.
I've seen some charm bracelets that could really rock somebody's world.
Yeah. So charm bracelets are a late Victorian and early 20th century phenomenon. They come out of the same Victorian idea for selling jewelry that birthstones came out of. So some of the earlier charm bracelets might be also for tourists. They might have like little enamel, tiny small enamel pendants of, you know, Vienna and you know, Munich and wherever. And you go to each town and you would add one as you went on the tour of Europe. I had a charm bracelet like that when I was a kid. And you would go to the jeweler in the town and he'd have these little things. And they also had what were called Wanderstock for men. And this was a walking stick for hikers. And you would go to the jeweler and they'd have a silver or later aluminum stamped emblem of like the local mountain or cathedral or some shrine that was holy to some saint, and you would pick it, and then the jeweler would say, well, go get a cup of coffee and come back in 15 minutes, and he would bend that thing around your Wanderstock and stick little nails in it, and you can see it in the book that we did on how to use amulets. So men would often use a Wanderstock to add these different things, but women and girls like the charm bracelets, boys would not wear them, of course. It was too associated with femininity. So when I was a kid, I had all kinds of charm bracelets, and the idea was that sometimes on your birthday you were given a charm. They might be, you know, they have little rings and loops, and sometimes you would start off by skipping every fourth one, and then you'd go back and fill in every other one, then you'd fill in every one. It really reached its peak, I think, in the era leading up to World War II and continued into the 50s. And by the 60s, it was much less of a social thing. And the wearing of bracelets was not and going to jewelry stores with your little girls to get them a little, you know, like the auntie or the grandma going to the jewelry store, that wasn't done as much anymore. That part of society had sort of crumbled away. But I remember going with my Tante Tony. I remember going with my grandmother, and one of the things, you know, on a little afternoon out with the girl would be to get her a little charm for her charm bracelet to commemorate something or for good luck or for whatever it might be. And you never bought, one more thing, you never just bought a charm bracelet full of charms. I need to explain that. They were added to. Now you go on eBay and you find a charm bracelet all made of charms. And people will at Etsy, they'll buy a bunch of charms and throw them together on a bracelet. Look, it's really antique looking. But that's not how they were done. They symbolized journeys and adventures that a girl had, just like the Wanderstock was for boys and men. At least in Europe.
Yeah, there's, you know, the commercialization today of that. I mean, you can, I think even there's a whole company. Is it Paparazzi or something? I don't know. They sell all kinds of craziness with that. Another question for you from the chat, and this goes back to more towards the crafting of amulets and talismans. Balkan Diviner asks, do the colors of the bracelets, amulets, talismans correspond in spellwork similarly to color association and candle work? So a red talisman for love, white for prayer, etc. A lot of people, you know, really work and strive for that color association. So I'm sure this is a question that many, many have.
So Balkan Diviner, you're backwards. candles with colors are only invented after petroleum wax was invented, which was in the late 19th century, and aniline dyes were only invented in the very late 19th, couple of years of the 19th century, and then reached their peak in the early 20th century. So the coloring of candles, because, you see, petroleum wax is dead white, whereas beeswax is this warm golden color. So the idea of associating colors with candles is very late. And in the history of humanity, the association of the colors comes from gemstones. And so the gemstone colors come first, candle colors second. So what you want to look at is those colors and how they're associated with healing and parts of the body and ultimately with astrology and the planets, which all have colors, and that goes back to classical Roman times. So just flip that whole idea on its head. What you might want to do is study a bit more about color magic, and you can find some of that in the book that I wrote and called The Artifact of Candle Magic, and in it I included a booklet by Mikhail Strabo, Sidney J.R. Steiner, and that contained the writings of Adele Clemens, who was a spiritualist teacher who did candle color services, and may have been the person who invented candle color services back in the 30s. So just check it out, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But that all comes after the gemstones. Gemstones first.
Awesome. You know, and that segued perfectly into a question Hey Maganda has about crystals and gems. Do lab-created gems have the same properties as natural ones?
Oh, okay. Let's put it on a continuum. Let's just take metal for starters. A nugget of gold coming out of a river, it's a perfect nugget of gold. It's just there. God put it there. You picked it up. It is a natural talisman. Now you can melt it down and smash it and make a coin or something. And then somebody could say, gold's too expensive. Let's melt it down again, and we'll make a bunch of brass coins, and we'll just electroplate them with a little bit of gold. Is it still gold? Don't know. Why don't we just make them out of plastic and then just, you know, put mylar, gold-colored mylar on them, right? At what point does the object become so diluted that it's no longer that object? It's hard to tell. It's a shifting spectrum, and everyone places their own self on it in a different place. So now we go to man-made gems. Well, do you want to have a sapphire that came out of the ground? Do you want a sapphire that someone made a cabochon to make a star sapphire, or a faceted sapphire, or a man-made sapphire, or what about glass? What about glass, right? It's just the color of the sapphire. What about a sapphire-colored sequin, shiny, but not anything but just a sequin? So you place yourself there. I find it hard to empower, for me, as a battery, a sequin. It doesn't last. I mean, you can put on a sequin dress and you can, you know, it's got super shiny and sparkly and all that. Rhinestones, which are glass, put that on. Wow. But, you know, you got to think about it every time you wear it, pretty much. Whereas if it was really a diamond necklace, it would be really powerful and it's a bigger battery. Does that make sense?
It definitely makes a lot of sense. I know, and actually, Troll T mentioned, do you want one that you found in the chat? You know, I can attest to having gone mining in things myself, mm-hmm. and using some of the gemstones and such that I found to make pendulums and other talismanic sorts of jewelry and such. And honestly, just head and shoulders. I think a lot of it has to do with that energy that's been put into it, developing it. Head and shoulders kind of blew me away instantly versus something that you kind of had to work with and charge and charge and charge.
Well, again, just to go back to the man-made gems, and what they are and what they do, there's a book that we published called Crystal Magic by John St. Germain, and he talks about he talks about different gems and which ones hold a charge the longest. It's really interesting, and there's a lot of thought behind it and a lot of experience. So for me, part of consecrating a piece of jewelry is to work with what you've got. You know, a brass ring with a small bohemian garnet in it is just as vital as, you know, some giant breastplate with 100 garnets in it, if it's what you've got, if it's what you're going to work with. But, you know, bigger isn't always better, but it's always more showy, and it may hold a charge longer.
You know, Reverend James actually makes an interesting point in the chat that he came at it from a chemistry perspective. Iron is iron. Gemstones are made from a combination of elements. The natural and the lab created would be the same. The question then becomes, do I want a gemstone that is old or new? Or another way to look at it is, how many memories do I want it to have? Also another perspective to kind of consider.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to jump in with a question that Hey Maganda asked, which is, what about the figure charms? What exactly are they?
I was just about to
You were
jump
just right there?
That.
Okay, good. I beat you to it. Sorry. So these are a class of amulets that really come out of Roman culture. Actually, Egyptian, too. There's something called the fingers of the embalmer. It's a two-finger thing. These are hand gestures that people make for whatever reason that have a meaning in the culture. Of course, they are culture-specific. And then a amulet is cast in metal or carved out of stone that emulates the gesture. So the figa gesture, which is where you put your thumb between your index finger and your middle finger and then clench your fist around it, is a penis-protecting anti-evil eye gesture from the Italian peninsula. And it was spread over into Portugal and Spain, to the Iberian peninsula. And it's called figa, which means the fig. So the fig is a female fruit, and then the idea is that the male penis will not be dehydrated, the man will not become impotent or suffer erectile dysfunction as long as he seeks the fertile womb. And it's a complicated, long cultural thing. Because the evil eye dries things up, and therefore the penis might dry up and so forth. So the fig or the female hand, which just stands in place of the female vulva, the eye, these are things that are moist and must be kept moist, and it's a big anti-evil eye thing. So the fig is a gesture, and then it becomes sort of separated from what it was. But Italian people will make the figa at you, men, especially if they think you're going to give them the evil eye, they'll make the figa. And but the stone has become associated with a stone carved figa, was particularly beloved by the Portuguese, carried to Brazil, where it became sort of a baby charm against the evil eye. But it theoretically should only be for male babies because it shows the penis in the fig. But there are other ones that would be used for females. But nowadays people tend to forget about the genderization of some of these charms. And so the coral horn, for instance, which is from Italy, is for male babies, and the forked coral is for girls. But who cares anymore? You can have what you want.
You know, a lot of people might not have known about the figa charms, and very thank you, Hey Maganda, for adding that to our discussion for tonight. And Reverend James is giving us the 10-minute warning. So, you know, we've covered so much in such a short time tonight, and I know this could easily be a topic for, you know, multiple series of shows. So in these last 10 or so minutes that we have, what information do you feel is really germane for the listeners to take away?
Well, number one, go to the Lucky W Amulet Archive. If you don't see what you're looking for there, write me a note at the Lucky Mojo forum, and I'll put it on my list of things to do first. As I said, I started this 30 years ago, and I've worked on it a lot, but then I stopped, and I'm trying to work on it again, which is why I suggested that I would like to talk about this topic here. So if you don't find something that you're looking for at the Lucky Windex, it's called, it's Lucky W Index, but when you run it together, it's Lucky Windex. If you don't find it at the Lucky W Index page, just go to the part of the forum that's about amulets, talismans, and charms, and ask me, hey, can you write a page on that? And I'll do it. And if you become my patron, even so much the better, I'll get to it faster. But I have all of these things in my head. I have pictures of them. Sometimes they're not in the Windex, but I've made a page on them, but I made it, and then I forgot to update the Windex, you know. So it could be that you'll get your reply and go right here, and it'll be right there because I already had it. So help me make the Lucky Windex better by suggesting topics, by which I mean amulets and charms, you'd like to see. Also, you can always read the book that I wrote with Gregory Lee White, because you'll find them in there. And many of the texts that go with those charms in the book on how to use amulets, those texts came from the Lucky W Amulet Archive, but were shortened in order to fit the book format.
You know, the book itself, we've mentioned it a couple times, the How to Use Amulets, Charms, and Talismans in the Hoodoo and Conjure Tradition. You know, it really is, it's one of those kind of almost unsung hero books. It's fascinating, the amount of information that is here. You know, you talk about natural curios, stone and crystal amulets, animal mascots, bone amulets, herb and root curios. Just, I mean, the entire gamut of what is considered an amulet, what can be used as an amulet, and how to use it. You talk, you know, the artisanal charms and such that are, you know, not the mass produced, although like we talked about tonight, mass produced can still pack a punch if needed and wanted. You know, how to fix them, how to prepare them, consecrate them. Maybe actually a little bit more into, because we talked about how to cleanse and things of that nature, and a little bit on the charging with water and such. Are there other methods that you recommend for consecrating and charging? Like, you know, we in some cases you talk about, like with a mojo bag, smoking it, you know, taking it through the incense and such.
That's a very good way to charge an amulet. It depends partly on what the amulet's made of. Mostly when we talk about talismans and amulets and charms, we're talking about solid things that are not very flexible or fragile or frangible. So we can often oil them, but if it is made of cloth, you're not going to want to do that. Or if it's made of paper, you're not going to want to do that. You're not going to want to oil a four-leaf clover, a real four-leaf clover. You could put it between two pieces of glass and then, you know, put smoke that way. But there are many ways. The same things that are used to fix a mojo can be used to fix any amulet, because a mojo is a kind of amulet. And so that's all I have to say about that. Some people, like I said, do like to use special waters, and they will use, you know, salt sometimes to put a stone into. In the book on amulets, charms, and talismans on page 57, there is a mojo hand. So mojo hands are amulets, and also sometimes people sew amulets on the outside of their mojo hands. So again, smoking would be appropriate for that, because you don't want to put it in water, because it might have herbs or roots that would rot or decay in water. Be practical.
You know, and when we talk about water, I know a lot that really follow the conjure traditions and such would ask, is lake water better than ocean water or river water or rainwater, storm water? You know, is there a specific kind of water that I should be using for my cleansing and charging needs?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say something about cleansing because we didn't mention that. Cleansing an amulet may not be necessary unless you feel that it has stuck energy on it that you don't like. But if you're going to cleanse it, you can use running water would be better for cleansing than lake water, in my opinion. Holy water from a church, if you belong to a church, that's good too. But I don't feel that amulets made from natural substances like crystals need to be cleansed. They're just there. But if you have them, if they've been worked or you don't know where they came from, you might want to cleanse them. But I'm not a big one for cleansing, nor am I a big one for what people call charging. What I try to do is focus my energy and then put it on me, and it becomes a battery for me. You see the difference?
Yes.
But that's just me. I mean, many people are into the whole cleansing, and some people are into sanctification. You have to sanctify it in the name of God, the Father, God, the Son, God, the Holy Ghost. Again, these are culture ways. They are not universal rules. So follow your culture's ways. If your culture is that only a priest can give you an amulet, then go to a priest and get one. For instance, scapulars that are used in the Catholic Church, they will say, you can buy a scapular, but it's no good unless the priest gives it to you with his own hand. Okay, then don't go do that. Priest, hear that request. Please pray over the scapular and give it to me. Yeah, he'll do it. And he won't even ask for money if he's a good priest. I mean, he'll just do it for free. So, again, it's your culture, your way, and that's what it is.
You know, for myself, growing up Catholic, very early on, a lot of the crystal necklaces, the crystal amulets and stuff that I would wear, you know, and nice little sachets around my neck and such, mm-hmm. I actually would take them with me to church and on Sunday ask the priests, whomever, you know, was saying Mass that day to mm-hmm. do a prayer to bless for protection or this, that, or the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I still carry most of these with me. Some I've gifted to others. You know, that's their time with me outlived its need. So, you know, they found new homes. But definitely, you know, could feel the vibration, you know, that, mm-hmm. that little bit of shift.
I'm going to say one more thing about disposing of amulets before we run out of time. If an amulet doesn't suit you, either you've outgrown the need for it or you feel that it wasn't the right one for you, you can dispose of them in burial and stuff. If they're metal, some metal detectorist will find them and be thrilled. But you can also leave them out in nature where someone might find them. Leave them on a tree stump or leave them at a picnic table in a campground and someone will go, oh, look what I found! And it'll have meaning for them and maybe it'll be the right one for them or maybe they'll lose it and pass it on. These things can be disposed of without destroying them.
And real quick, before we do run out of time, I just wanted to call out that there on hoodooworkshops.com, there is a class out there for $25 with Papa G, Amulets, Charms, and Talismans, based on the book, How to Use Amulets, Charms, and Talismans. And also, actually, Reverend James has one for Chinese moon blocks and paper talismans, talking about the Chinese and Taoist paper talismans. So many great classes out there. Lucky Stones and Lucky Rocks with Heidi Holton. You know, just tons and tons of information. Definitely check out hoodooworkshops.com. And
great.
There is the music for tonight. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Miss Kat, for joining us tonight. This has been nothing short of spectacular having you join us again, and we hope to have you back with us again soon. I hope everyone's enjoyed your time with us this evening. Until next time we all meet, keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Ms. Kat of LuckyMojo.com from Forestville, California, for joining us this week. It's back again next week. Don't miss it. Reading Palooza 4, our listeners' appreciation show. Readers will be announced soon. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at folkplunger.com and at folkplunger on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.org, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I am your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from folkplunger.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics Mages Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Miss Kat, yet again. Many blessings. Peace. We'll see you next week. Good night.